Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we love to dig into all sorts of fascinating sources, and today we're going way back in time to 1915 for a book called Making the Farm Pay.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a treasure trove of information.
Oh, it is. And you know, it's amazing. So much of what it talks about is still relevant today, especially for folks who are into the whole Think and Act Locally movement.
I'm intrigued. What kind of stuff does it cover?
Well, one of the big ideas is this concept of diversified farming.
Okay, diversified farming. I can see how that would have been important back then, but does it still hold up today?
You bet it does. The book argues that focusing on just one crop can be super risky.
Yeah, I guess if your one crop fails, you're kind of out of luck.
Exactly. And the book uses wheat farming as a prime example.
Wheat, huh. So what's the issue with wheat?
Well, back then, wheat was like the go-to crop for a lot of farmers. But the book points out that it can be pretty vulnerable to things like drought and market fluctuations.
Oh, I see. So if there's a bad year for wheat, your income takes a major hit.
Right. And that's where diversified farming comes in. The idea is that by growing a variety of crops, you're spreading out your risk.
Makes sense. If one crop fails, you've got others to fall back on. It's like diversifying your investments.
Exactly. And you know what's really interesting? The book actually claims that diversified farming can be even more profitable than focusing on just one crop.
Really? More profitable. Now I'm really listening.
Yeah. It gets into some specific examples and calculations. Like, it compares the profit per acre for wheat, which at the time was around $5.
$5 an acre, okay.
To the potential profit from an acre of potatoes, which could be a whopping $100.
Wait, $100 an acre for potatoes? That's like 20 times more.
Yeah. It's pretty mind-blowing. And this isn't just about maximizing profits for some massive farm. Even if you've got a small garden or a little plot of land, the same principles apply.
That's a really compelling argument for thinking about what you plant, even on a small scale.
Absolutely. And the book highlights all sorts of crops that often get overlooked.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, it mentions grapes, berries, onions, alfalfa. And there's this fascinating story about some folks in Arcola, Illinois.
Arcola, Illinois. Okay, what were they growing?
They found success with this unique plant called dasheen. Ever heard of it?
Dasheen. Can't say I have.
Me neither. But apparently, it's got a flavor similar to boiled chestnuts.
Oh, boiled chestnuts. Interesting.
And that's kind of the point, right?
Okay.
It's about finding those niche crops that maybe aren't so common but could thrive in your specific area.
Yeah, like tapping into that local potential. It's all about thinking and acting locally.
Exactly. What resources do you have? What unique crops or livestock might do well in your community? It's about creating this diverse and resilient food system right where you are.
I love that. Instead of just accepting whatever's available at the supermarket, we can actually shape the food landscape in our own communities.
That's the power of it. And the book goes beyond just choosing crops. It dives into the nitty-gritty of maximizing yields on small farms and gardens.
Oh, cool. So what kind of tips does it offer?
Well, one of the big things is soil improvement. It talks about using legumes like clover to enrich the soil with nitrogen.
So working with nature instead of relying on chemical fertilizers.
Exactly. And I've heard about this thing called green manure, where you grow crops specifically to plow them under and improve the soil structure.
Ah, green manure. Yeah, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's super effective for building healthy soil. It's all about creating that closed loop system.
It's amazing. Like, instead of tossing plant debris, you're actually using it to nourish the soil for your next crops.
And it goes on to cover techniques like mulching and proper irrigation to help conserve moisture, especially in drier areas.
So we're seeing a theme here, right? Choosing the right crops, building healthy soil, conserving water. It's all about creating a more sustainable and resilient system.
Absolutely. And it gets even more specific. Like for potatoes, it talks about hilling versus mulching.
Hilling versus mulching. Now, I'm not quite sure what the difference is.
Well, hilling means mounding soil up around the base of the potato plant. And mulching is covering the soil with organic material, like straw or wood chips.
Ah, okay, I see. Each method has its pros and cons, I guess.
And the book helps you figure out which approach might be best for your situation.
That's fantastic. Even within one crop, there's so much to consider.
And that's why this book is such a gem. It empowers you to make informed choices based on your specific needs and goals.
It's incredible to me that a book written over 100 years ago is still so relevant. It's like the fundamentals of good farming haven't really changed all that much.
I agree. And I think it speaks to the timelessness of these principles, whether you're a seasoned farmer or just starting out with a little garden.
Absolutely. And before we move on, I wanted to remind our listeners that if you're digging this deep dive in our mission to help you think and act locally, we'd love your support.
Yeah, every little bit helps.
You can find a link to donate on our website, thinkandactlocally.com/donate.
Now, I'm really curious to hear more about this marketing piece. You mentioned it earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's coming up next. The book actually makes a compelling case for why marketing is so important, even for small-scale farmers and gardeners.
Okay, color me intrigued. Let's dive in. You know, one of the things that struck me was how this book talks about getting the most out of even the tiniest plots of land.
Oh, yeah. Like what kinds of tips?
Well, it goes on and on about soil improvement, like using cover crops, things like clover and cowpeas, to naturally enrich the soil with nitrogen.
So like working with nature, right? Not just dumping a bunch of chemical fertilizers on everything.
Exactly. And remember that green manure technique we talked about?
Uh-huh.
That's another awesome way to build healthy soil on a small scale.
Yeah, it's so cool how they were already thinking about closed-loop systems way back then.
Right. It's all about sustainability. And right. Another thing they stress is moisture conservation.
Which makes sense, especially if you're in a dry climate or don't have a ton of water to work with.
Totally. And they highlight all these techniques like mulching and drip irrigation to make every drop count.
Mulching, yeah, I get that, helps keep the soil cool and moist, but drip irrigation, how did that work?
Well, it's basically a system that delivers water directly to the roots, so you're not wasting any on evaporation or runoff.
Oh, that's smart.
Super efficient. Saves you time and money in the long run, too.
Okay, so we've got soil improvement, moisture conservation. What other gems did they have up their sleeves?
Well, they're big on choosing the right plants for your specific conditions.
Oh, yeah, like matching the plant to your climate and soil type.
Exactly. And they even talk about the amount of sunlight your garden gets, all those little details.
So it's not just about grabbing whatever looks pretty at the garden center.
Nope. Got to do your research, make sure you're picking varieties that'll actually thrive in your local environment.
Makes sense. And speaking of research, they're also big on continuous learning, you know, staying up to date on new techniques and technologies,
Yeah. Even
experimenting a bit.
Yeah, they knew back then that agriculture was always evolving, which is even more true today with all the advances in sustainable farming.
It's like, don't just blindly follow tradition. Be open to new ideas. Experiment. Share what you learn with other gardeners and farmers.
Love it. That's the whole think and act locally spirit in action.
Being proactive, resourceful, always looking for ways to improve. And you know what that reminds me? They talk a lot about marketing, too.
Oh, interesting. How does that fit in?
Well, they make the point that even if you're just growing a little extra in your backyard, you can still benefit from thinking about marketing and distribution.
Hadn't thought about that.
Like maybe selling at farmers markets, setting up a roadside stand, even just selling directly to neighbors or restaurants.
Right. Even if you're not trying to make a living from your garden, you can still share the abundance and maybe even earn a little extra cash.
Plus, there's something really satisfying about connecting directly with people who appreciate fresh, locally grown food.
Oh, totally. That sense of pride and accomplishment, and it's a great way to build community, strengthen those local food systems.
Speaking of community, they also dive into how to get the next generation involved in agriculture.
Oh, yeah. How so?
They suggest this thing called profit-sharing arrangements within families.
Profit-sharing? How does that work?
So instead of just giving kids chores, you involve them in specific projects and give them a share of the profits.
Oh, I see. Like they get to choose what to grow and then they earn a percentage of the sales.
Exactly. Teaches them about responsibility, entrepreneurship, the value of hard work.
It's not just about making money. It's about instilling a love of farming, a connection to the land.
And it could be a cool way for young people to learn about business and finance, even marketing.
Totally. And it ties right back into that think and act locally theme, empowering young people to be a part of their local food systems, see the potential for a future in agriculture.
It's amazing how this guide from over 100 years ago is still so relevant today.
It really is. Those principles of sustainable farming and community-based food systems, they're timeless.
And it's up to each of us to take those ideas and make them our own, you know, adapt them to our lives and our communities.
Totally. And speaking of adapting, there's this other fascinating piece I want to touch on, the importance of record keeping and financial management.
Oh, okay. So now we're talking about the business side of things.
Exactly. Might not sound as exciting as growing tomatoes, but it's crucial for creating a successful, sustainable operation.
So what do they recommend?
They're big on keeping detailed records, you know, expenses, yields,
I
profits.
can just imagine them meticulously recording everything in those old-fashioned ledgers.
And it wasn't just about crunching numbers, it was about learning from their experiences, seeing patterns, making adjustments to improve year after year.
Oh, I see. Like a constant cycle of observation, analysis, adaptation.
Precisely, a true embodiment of that think and act locally philosophy.
Even if you're just gardening, keeping track of what works and what doesn't can help you become a better gardener over time.
Absolutely. Helps you make smarter decisions about what to plant, how much to grow, maybe even if you want to sell your surplus.
So we've talked about the economics, the practical stuff, but there's one more thing I want to touch on, the community
Oh,
aspect.
for sure. That's a huge part of it.
The guide talks about building relationships with other farmers, gardeners, even consumers.
Yeah, sharing knowledge, collaborating on projects, supporting each other's endeavors.
It's like creating this network of support and inspiration where people can learn from each other and work together to make their local food system stronger.
And it's not just farmers talking amongst themselves. They also encourage outreach to city folks, inviting them to experience farm life, learn about food production, get involved.
It's about breaking down those barriers between urban and rural communities, creating this shared responsibility for our food system.
Exactly. And you know what? That reminds me of another point they make that's super relevant today, the whole concept of reducing waste.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
They're all about efficiency, minimizing waste in every single aspect of farming.
Making the most of what you have, minimizing your impact on the environment, creating a more self-sufficient system.
Totally. It's a message that resonates so strongly with the Think and Act Locally movement today.
It's about recognizing that our resources are limited, and by being mindful of our consumption and our waste, we can create a more sustainable future for everyone.
And speaking of sustainability, they also touch on fair pricing and ethical treatment of agricultural workers.
Right, a sustainable food system has to be a just and equitable one, too.
It's about considering the well-being of everyone involved, from the farmers to the workers to the consumers.
Recognizing that interconnectedness, striving to create a system that benefits everybody.
Exactly. You know, as we wrap up this deep dive into making the farm pay, I keep coming back to the ingenuity and resourcefulness of farmers.
Me too. This guide is a testament to their creativity and resilience, even way back then.
They were dealing with unpredictable weather, changing markets, limited resources.
And they found ways not just to survive, but to thrive, to experiment, to innovate, to collaborate, and to pass on their knowledge.
It's a legacy that continues to inspire us today as we try to build a more sustainable and equitable food
A
future.
future we can all be part of, no matter how big or small our role might be.
So, as we close out this episode, we want to leave you with a challenge. Think and act locally.
Explore your local farmers markets. Get to know the people who grow your food, maybe start a garden, share what you've learned with others.
Every step, big or small, makes a difference.
And if you're inspired by what you've heard today and want to support our mission, you can find a link to donate on our website, thinkandactlocally.com/i/donate.
Your contribution helps us keep bringing you these deep dives and spread the message of local empowerment.
Thanks for listening.
It's about recognizing that we're not just isolated individuals when it comes to food, you know?
Oh, absolutely. This whole think and act locally thing, it's about creating this web of interconnectedness, not just between farmers, but between farmers and the community at large.
Exactly. And that's something the guide emphasizes too. Like, they talk about the importance of farmers getting together, not just to sell stuff, but to swap ideas, learn from each other, and lend a helping hand.
Yeah, I love that. It's about fostering a sense of shared responsibility for our food system, right?
Yeah.
Recognizing that we're all in this together.
And it goes beyond just the farming community itself. Like, they also encourage reaching out to folks in cities, you know, inviting them to visit farms, see how food's produced, maybe even get their hands dirty.
Bridging that urban-rural divide, fostering understanding, creating a more resilient food web.
Exactly. And you know what? Speaking of resilience, there's another point they make that's so relevant today, the importance of cutting down on waste.
Oh, yeah, reducing waste, that's huge these days.
Huge. And they were all over it back then. Like, they stressed efficiency, minimizing waste in every aspect of farming.
Making the most of what you have, being mindful of your impact on the environment, creating a more sustainable and self-sufficient system.
Right. It's like that old saying, waste not, want not.
Exactly. And it's a message that resonates so deeply with the Think and Act Locally movement.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that our resources aren't infinite, you know.
Yeah, we got to be mindful of our consumption and the waste we generate if we want to create a truly sustainable future for everyone.
And, you know, thinking about sustainability also means thinking about fairness. Like,
yeah.
The guide talks about fair pricing and treating agricultural workers ethically.
Oh, for sure. A sustainable food system has to be a just one, too, right?
Absolutely. You can't have one without the other.
It's about considering the well-being of everyone in the food chain, from the farmers to the workers to us, the eaters.
It's all connected.
Yeah, it's like a big web, and we're all part of it.
Well said. You know, as we wrap up this deep dive into making the farm pay, I keep coming back to the ingenuity and resourcefulness of those farmers from a century ago.
Me too. They were dealing with so many challenges: unpredictable weather, fluctuating markets, limited technology.
But they found ways to not just make it work, but to thrive.
And they did it by being creative, resilient, collaborative, and by sharing their knowledge with others.
Their legacy is so inspiring, especially now as we're facing our own set of challenges when it comes to creating a more sustainable food future.
A future we can all be a part of, no matter how big or small our role might be.
So, as we close out this episode, we want to leave you with a little challenge. Think and act locally.
Explore your local farmers markets. Get to know the folks who grow your food. Maybe start a little garden. Share what you've learned with your friends and neighbors.
Every little bit counts. And if you're feeling inspired by what you've heard today and want to support our mission, you can find a link to donate on our website, thinkandactlocally.com/don/donate.
Your contribution helps us keep bringing you these deep dives and spreading the message of local empowerment. Thanks for listening.